Kia ora, New Zealand. Good morning. Welcome to News Talk ZB. I'm Jack Tame with you through to midday today. And my guest this morning is one of the most respected solar scientists in the world. Professor Lucy Green is passionate about the sun, but even more than that, Lucy has a passion for engaging the public with space science and astronomy and making what are fairly complicated subjects a little more accessible for those of us who don't have her sort of scientific background. Lucy is heading our way next month as part of a show called Cosmic Shambles Live, which is a mashup of music, including Holly Smith, whom you just heard, science and comedy. It's kind of like TEDx meets the show QI with a bit of Holly Smith in there for fun. Professor Lucy Green joins me now from Sydney. Very good morning, Lucy.
Yeah, good morning to you too.
I should start with perhaps the most obvious question, but for those of us who don't have a great background in science, what is a solar physicist?
Yeah, it's a good question. And when I was growing up, I didn't realise that a job in solar physics even existed. And so I can't believe that actually that's now what I do with my time. So, so my job is about studying our local star, the sun, and trying to understand why it gets up to what it gets up to. And it turns out that our sun is an incredibly dynamic object. And in its atmosphere, it has explosions and eruptions happening all the time. And we like to study these explosions from space. And my job is about trying to understand what physical processes are happening to cause these incredible events. And they're incredible from a scientific point of view, but they're also really beautiful to look at too.
Because we kind of take the sun for granted, don't we?
We totally do. And I think for me, I had this sort of moment where the sun changed from being this everyday object that I had never really engaged with, because the sun is so bright, you know, by its very nature, you can't look at it directly. And so sort of for the, you know, most people on Earth, you never really know what the sun is because you can never look at it. And then when I was an undergraduate, I had a chance to look at the sun through a specialist telescope. And what I saw just completely blew my mind. And what I want to do in the shows that we're bringing to New Zealand is sort of lift the lid on what the sun is really like and allow people to have that moment of discovery that I still remember having.
Because, I haven't looked through a telescope at the sun, but I imagine it as kind of bubbling away, which I know sounds weird, but it is somewhat volatile, isn't it?
It is, and that's a really good description, actually. When we have telescopes that can look at the surface of the sun and zoom in great detail, actually, you do see that the sun, which is made of a gas, so it's completely fluid, and you see at the surface, it is sort of bubbling, a bit like a pan of water on a stove.
Yeah.
You see these sort of hot packets of gas come up, and they shine very brightly, and then they radiate. And they give off light and they cool down and then these pockets of gas sink down. So you're right, if you look over many hours, you do see the surface of the sun sort of roiling and moving around. And it's remarkable. And I think the interesting thing about the sun is that it's just changing all the time, but you do need a specialist telescope to see that.
So is it the sun that is responsible for what scientists call space weather?
It is, and space weather is a really interesting and current and important topic as well. So these explosions and eruptions that I mentioned that take place in the sun's atmosphere, they send out emissions into the solar system. So we're 150 million kilometres from the sun, but it is still able to affect us in a very intimate way. And when these emissions and eruptions reach the Earth, actually the first thing they do is they encounter the Earth's magnetic field, and it's sort of, again, that's another part of the solar system that we don't necessarily think about. But when this stuff gets to our magnetic field, it sort of shakes it up. And what happens is a series of electric currents gets generated, but sort of the interesting stuff are the knock-on effects. So problems with perhaps electricity distribution lines, the southern lights, the aurora, they're generated by these emissions from the sun interacting with the Earth. And what we're learning today is that actually the sun is, through space weather, able to impact not only our electricity, but Our communications, our navigations, satellites, and almost everywhere you look in modern society that relies on technology, the sun can have an impact. And
really?
So it's a big part of my job. Yeah. And the more we look, the more we discover.
So it kind of surges. Would that be a good description? The energy coming from the sun comes in waves or surges out at times.
It does. So you've got like the light, which is constant, but then you've got these other explosions and eruptions, which are sporadic. And you're right, it is like a sort of wave coming through the solar system at us. And one of the things that happens in space weather research is that people try and forecast when those waves are coming our way and when they will arrive and what kind of impact they might have when they get here.
Do they have good impacts or is it all bad?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. So I think probably we might say the good impacts are the aurora because they're so beautiful to look at. But at the same time, then you can get problems with your modern technology. So there's a lot of work that goes into forecasting space weather, engineering our technology to be resilient to space weather. And actually, in the UK, we've done a lot of work about looking at like which businesses are impacted. So recently, I did some work with the finance sector in the UK to help them better prepare for space weather. Right. And so, okay, I'm surprised to be a solar scientist, but I'm even more surprised just to be working with the finance sector on it.
So how can it impact the finance sector?
Yeah, so it's really interesting in a sort of range of ways because they rely on having very good connections to satellites because a lot of the timing stamps for bank transfers comes from spacecraft, and they come from the same spacecraft that you would use for your sat nav on your phone, for example.
Yeah.
So these spacecraft can give you your position, but they also give you your time as well. And those signals coming from those spacecraft can get sort of distorted during the times when the sun is very active. And so you could lose accuracy. And so that's one of the areas that we were looking at, because they were saying to me, oh, well, we need to have more and more accurate timestamps going into the future. The regulators will require that of us. And so I was able to say, well, actually, you need to factor in then the fact that if you're getting your time from a satellite, you're going to lose some accuracy. So you need to look at other ways of getting your time. And you could use an atomic clock, for example.
That is so interesting. that is really interesting. So this is a super dumb question, but how do you observe the sun when it's so bright? Do you just use a telescope and then put some sunglasses on? I mean, how does that work?
You know, it is effectively a very sophisticated setup like that. So what I tend to do is use spacecraft that are above the Earth's atmosphere.
Right.
And that's brilliant because once you get above the Earth's atmosphere, you're not restricted by it. So you get over the effects of seeing, which is what makes stars twinkle, you know, sort of move around a little bit in the night sky. And also you can then look at the sun in any wavelength of light. And so as a scientist, I'm interested in not only the light that our eyes can pick up, but also other wavelengths of light. So you'll be familiar with things like radio waves and X-rays. And the sun gives off light in those wavelengths.
Right.
And above the atmosphere, we can see all of it. And so what we do is, we launch our telescopes into space, and then we use special filters to selectively pick out particular wavelengths of light, and that then allows us to see different layers in the sun's atmosphere. So you might sort of think of the sun as being a bit like an onion with sort of different layers in it. And so, we just utilize the light coming from the sun, selectively take out different parts of it, and then we can see all this amazing activity.
Wow, that's so... That is really cool. Is the sun going to burn out?
It will, but we have some time before that will happen. So the sun sort of cannibalizes itself. It's using its own material to power itself. And so it's limited in its resources. But it's about 4.5 billion years old at the moment, and it's got about that left on the clock. So it's not a middle-aged star.
So from
our point of view, we're okay.
We're okay for now, but eventually, once the world is about twice as old as it is now, we're stuffed.
Yes. And there's no way of avoiding it because the sun will do what it's going to do. But then there are some people who are sort of thinking about, well, you know, maybe we'll have...
Let's go on a road trip. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I've got a road trip, an epic road trip.
I'm oddly soothed by that. I find that kind of a soothing prospect, the fact that, this too will end.
Yeah, I guess there's something about that.
I don't want it to come about any time soon, but,
No.
Yeah.
I find it quite soothing, I think, that people are thinking about an escape plan. And I kind of like that. And that's one of the aspects that it's sort of mind-boggling to think about where we might be, if humans indeed are still around at that point in time on the Earth, where we might be and what our technology might be like in millions of years' time. It's incredible.
Yeah. Tell me about how you approach communication, because you are a very, very good speaker, and I've been watching videos of you online, Lucy. I mean, you are very talented, and I know that I don't want to categorize all scientists as struggling, but many scientists perhaps struggle to speak in terms that those of us who don't have PhDs in solar physics can understand. So how important is communication for you?
Oh, for me, it's hugely important. And right from the start, I always thought there's no point in discovering new knowledge if you don't tell anybody about it. And for me, I wanted to tell people beyond just my immediate peer group. And it was really interesting, actually, because I would talk to my colleagues, and because space science for them is very day-to-day, that's what they've been doing for decades, they wouldn't necessarily get too excited. But when you go to a public audience and they're experiencing the same wonder for the first time, I got such an enthusiasm that it was quite infectious. And so I love the fact that I can share the knowledge, but I love the fact that you also are allowed to be enthusiastic and excited, and I think that connects people in a very special way. So for me, getting out and talking to people about what I do is just hugely rewarding, and it has to be. I think everybody has to benefit from that communication, and if they don't, then you've got it wrong. But you're right, not all scientists want to get out and do that, and that's fine. And so I sort of see my role as partly sort of talking about what I do, but also being a spokesperson for what perhaps other people are doing in my department too. And there's just so much interesting work that's happening in space science and astronomy. It's just remarkable, discovering planets around other stars, studying black holes, galaxies, how they form, how they evolve. And there's a particular mission at the moment called Gaia, which is mapping 1 billion stars in our own galaxy to understand how our galaxy formed. This is really mind-boggling stuff. And for me, it's a privilege to be able to go out to the general public and talk about these things.
And I suppose as well, in an industry that is perceived at the very least as being dominated by men, you are an important role model.
Certainly try to be, and I think you can either sort of implicitly be that role model just by the very action of going out and talking about science, or you can explicitly talk about the issues of gender in unbalance, is that the right word, in science.
Yeah.
And I think both of those things are important, and certainly I make sure that I go to schools where I am speaking to girls, and if I have the opportunity, I find it interesting to actually raise the issues about women in science with the girls so that they have an opportunity to talk about it and be consciously aware of factors that might lead up to them eventually deciding not to go into science, even though they're perfectly capable and perhaps incredibly interested in it too.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It is something that is important to me, because science is so interesting and so rewarding, and it makes me really sad to think that part of our society is not being encouraged to pursue what they're talented at.
Well, Lucy, it's such a pleasure to speak with you. Honestly, I'm. There are so many more things I want to ask you, but they're going to have to wait for another time. It's a real pleasure to have you coming to the country. Your show is going to be coming to Auckland on the 4th of April. It'll be in Wellington on the 8th of April and Christchurch on the 10th of April. We will have all the details for Cosmic Shambles Live at our website, newstalkzb.co.nz. And Dr. Lucy Green, you have yourself a very good weekend.
Yeah, you too. Thank you so much. See you soon.
Thank you.